Hey, it's Tommy from Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics to talk about how to fix this mess. Even President Obama made a surprise appearance. We're doing it all again November 5th to 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcasts, panels, and workshops. Plus, there'll be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get tickets at CrookedCon.com. If you're a friend of the pod, you get a discount too. See you there.
What's up, Los Angeles? Welcome to Love It or Leave It, live from Hollywood. I'm John Lovett, the exact midpoint between Marty McFly and Doc Brown. That sucks. All right. We've got a great show for you tonight, but first, let's get into it. What a week. Funeral services for the late South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham were held in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday. I've never been Graham's biggest fan, but I was very moved by the 21 twink salute. Graham's remains were first brought to the Capitol building for a live stream ceremony in the rotunda. Per his wishes, the service was open casket, face down. Here's Vice President J.D. Vance honoring Graham in the Capitol.
Lindsey Graham told me a story about his time in the House. And if I repeated exactly what he told me, Darlene, it would be the end of my political career forever. But what I can say is that I was laughing so hard that by the time we got to the next event, I had abdominal cramps and I was barely able to speak because Lindsey Graham could make anybody laugh.
What a heartwarming story. So often gay friendships are fraught because of sexual tension or unrequited feelings. It's nice to see a positive example. A funeral service was then held at the National Cathedral, where Trump delivered a beautiful, heartfelt eulogy.
Virtually everyone, Republican or Democrat, liked Lindsey. Well, not everybody, but it sounds good. Not everybody. He was a tough cookie, okay? I have to veer from this for a second. He was a tough cookie, Darlene.
Trump didn't specify what kind of cookie, but I think we all know. Double stuffed. Continued Trump.
Our nation needs more men and women like that great person sitting, laying, wherever he may be. I think I know where he is, and I think he's up there. I think he's watching us. I'm pretty sure of it.
He did love to watch, said a jacked, sobbing 25-year-old who nobody at the funeral seemed to know. Trump also reminisced about the time he read off Lindsey Graham's actual phone number after the late senator pissed Trump off during the 2016 presidential campaign.
As you remember, Lindsey and I did not exactly get off to the best of starts. So naturally, I did something that I shouldn't have done. I shared his personal cell phone number with the millions of people that happened to be watching that particular day as I made a speech, a very important speech. And I remember the number 202-228-0292 if anybody wants to give it a shot.
You call the number, Lindsey Graham answers, then you hear Mitch McConnell whispering in the background, "Tell everybody I'm not here." Because he's dead. Sean Hannity also offered a few words.
Lindsey, Mr. President, I argue in my mind, probably has a heavenly version of Mar-a-Lago. It may even be a little bigger. And I wouldn't be surprised if he added one big, beautiful ballroom and an arch somewhere on the property. Because he would want to obviously duplicate his dearest friend in life, you, Mr. President.
And in Mar-a-Lago heaven, none of the prostitutes are Chinese spies gathering intel on U.S. officials, and the prostitute services are free. And you just see one free prostitute who actually likes spending time with you. And you don't just have sex, you go to dinner and on little trips, and you realize you have a lot in common. And actually, weirdly, you had the best time just doing an errand together at Home Depot in heaven, buying a big pot. And you decide to hold hands by the pool, and at first it's scary because you know so many people there. Sheldon Adelson, half of Diamond and Silk, Rush Limbaugh, Charlie Kirk. But everyone is just relieved to see that you're at peace and this dark cloud that's floated above you your entire life disappears. And you wake up each morning in heaven and have this strange deja vu, or really the opposite of deja vu, reminded of a feeling you don't have. an urgency, a panic to do more, fight harder, be known, be essential, be on television, bestride the world like a conqueror, to be big, to leave a mark, to move borders and topple regimes, to matter, because you do matter. You matter to your free prostitute who is not a spy and who you love and who loves you. And you dance and spin in that big ballroom in the sky at the wedding you never allowed yourself to imagine. And everyone is cheering. The cute boy from your reserve unit all those years ago is cheering. Your parents who died when you and your sister were so young are cheering. And then it all melts like wax in your hands until you're standing alone in a blackened pit in the desert. And you laugh for the last time, for now you understand the devil as he whispers in your ear that you cannot truly know hell without first knowing happiness, even for just a moment. The Pentagon also announced that they would be renaming South Carolina's Joint Base Charleston to Joint Base Lindsey Graham, or as the base will soon be known, Bottom Gun. Okay. Welcome to Joint Base Lindsey Graham, flyboy. Forget what you learned at the academy. We do things a little differently down here. Take those pants off. A man died. Show some respect. Both Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky came to D.C. for the funeral. Zelensky was there to show gratitude for Graham's support for Ukraine, while Netanyahu was in town to see what an adult-sized casket looks like. Speaking of the devil, you did great. You did great. I know. I understand. That's an intense joke. But it's a good joke. Structurally, it's just excellent. Wasn't going to get a laugh. We knew that going in. We knew that no one's going to laugh at that joke. It's horrible to think about, but it's good. Speaking of the devil, on Sunday, the Wall Street Journal published a report on unseen footage from director Alex Holder, who had exclusive documentary access to Senator Graham from 2023 until his death, which included this praise for Trump and Netanyahu.
He's been a great wartime president. I said last night that Trump and Bibi are like Roosevelt and Churchill. I mean, they're the right two guys to confront this evil.
Roosevelt must be turning over in his grave. And discovering his legs work in there? Awesome. Speaking of grave circumstances, there is new reporting from the New York Times, The Bulwark, and Notice on the dire financial straits of the Democratic National Committee under its chair, Ken Martin.
The paper highlights a cash disparity between the two parties, noting that President Trump controls a $400 million super PAC. The Republican National Committee is sitting on nearly $130 million, while the DNC is $2 million in debt.
Sounds like it's time for the Democrats to put on the best damn talent show this town has ever seen. The DNC had to put their physical Washington, D.C. headquarters up as collateral for a $15 million line of credit during 2025's off-year elections. When Ken Martin said, "We can't afford to lose the House," I thought he meant of representatives. And as a progressive, I beg you to keep in mind that if they can't pay the money back, the correct term for the Democratic Party is unhoused. The DNC chair also reportedly threw his phone at the desk of a junior staffer he was scolding. Good thing he throws like a little bitch, responded the aide who had previously worked for Amy Klobuchar. Just to be clear, it is wrong to throw your phone anywhere near a colleague. Apart from the obvious reasons, you shouldn't throw an object you need to retrieve after. You throw a stapler, a binder, a three-hole punch, a copy of the DNC bylaws laying around. The exchange is over. You storm off. If you throw your phone at somebody, wherever it lands, that's your next stop. Collecting your phone off the ground in embarrassing silence. That's just stupid. And it's wrong to throw your phone. The news has set off renewed calls for Martin to step down. California Congressman Sam Liccardo posted to X, "Ken Martin must resign. As Democrats, we have become too captured by failing strategies. We must fail forward and pivot. The urgency of this moment will not reward, and our children will not forgive, torpidity." Torpidity? Which pretentious jagoff wrote this? Me? Also, fail forward, that's not a goal. That's just tripping. And news dropped today that the DNC was also scammed out of $29,000 by a fraudster sending emails as Ken Martin. Democrats have asked police to immediately track this guy down so that they can elect him the new DNC chair. Explained a DNC spokesperson, he couldn't answer any of our questions to any degree of satisfaction, so he just thought for sure that's our Ken. Speaking of having questions, during a post-screening red carpet interview at the premiere of Spider-Man Brand New Day, musician Steve Lacy was asked this.
All the characters in the film you're aware of, and without spoiling anything, who is your favorite or who are you most excited to see?
You know what?
He then spoils the movie. Some fans were pissed, but what's really crazy is that they managed to keep it a secret that Mitch McConnell has been shooting a Marvel movie this whole fucking time. And finally, the Minnesota town of Luverne is now home to the world's largest nutcracker, which is nearly 66 feet tall. R.I.P. Lindsey Graham, you would have loved imagining the world's largest nuts. All right, we've got a great show for you tonight. And we will be right back.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Balesa. Stop what you're doing and listen closely, because Balesa is giving away free spicy toys or gift cards for toys to every single person who's listening. If you haven't heard of Balesa, they're one of North America's top-rated sex toy companies, and they're hooking the Love It or Leave It audience up with a very special deal. Their toys have gone viral for a reason, like their famous Whisper Collection. It's fully silent vibrators. If you live with roommates, a partner, or God forbid, your parents, these toys are silent. Without compromising power. Wow, it's like a stealth bomber. Looking to spice up date night? The Key Vibe is a discreet magnetic wearable that adds extra excitement to any adult situation. So Balesa is sending out free toys or gift cards to everyone who signs up now at bbvibes.com/loveit. Boy, you dream of one day having your name be a code for a deal on a vibrator. You heard that right. Every single one of you wins something. Just click the link in the episode description or head to bbvibes.com/loveit. That's bbvibes.com/loveit. Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Thrive Market. The best thing about Thrive Market is that it takes the chore out of grocery shopping. Rather than wandering through crowded stores, you can customize your shopping experience online, filter by your personal health goals and dietary needs to find exactly what you need in seconds. No stressing over labels or Googling every additive. Every product and brand is vetted before they ever hit the site. The in-app barcode scanner finds a healthier swap for almost anything in your pantry right now. Member pricing up to 30% off, plus weekly sales, plus free gifts, plus price matching, plus free delivery on qualifying orders, all in the membership. 90 plus filters mean you're only seeing what works for you. High protein, low sugar, GLP-1 friendly, gluten-free, keto, and more. No more decision fatigue. Your filtered results only show what fits your household. I had some Chomp grass-fed beef sticks. I had some crackers from Simple Mills, Lesser Evil popcorn, Pirate's Booty. We all love Pirate's Booty. Thrive Market is also great for stocking up on pantry staples like olive oil, oats, nut butters, spices, and canned goods. Ready to build your ultimate summer cart? Join Thrive Market with my link at thrivemarket.com/loveit for $20 off your first three orders plus a free gift. That's thrivemarket.com/loveit.
And we're back. Guy Branum will join in just a moment, but first, Cricket has a new show with the producers of The Circus and Left Right TV that you'll definitely want to check out before the midterms. It's called Long Play. The 6-episode series hosted by Jen Palmieri, Aaron Haynes, and Mitch Landrieu is all about the South as the new epicenter of American politics. Each episode will focus on a different state, and the first two are out now at youtube.com/@LongPlayseries and on the Long Play feed wherever you get your podcast. So just search for Long Play and check it out. And if you're in LA, go to cricket.com/events to come see us live, along with upcoming guests including Hamilton's David Diggs, Anthony Michael Hall from The Breakfast Club, comedian Elliot Glazer, and many more. All right, please welcome to the show, friend of the pod and an old gay to remember, it's Guy Branum.
Hello.
Hi, Guy. Oh my gosh. This is your first time in the new studio.
It's a set. It's a very set. Exciting.
It is a set.
You have a statue of eagles.
That's right, which you bought from an estate sale.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
That's very lovely.
From a
lovely.
Patriotic dead person. Maybe, no, before Lindsey Graham.
No, I mean, I would have to imagine that the dead represent a greater percentage of the patriotic than the living these days.
Sure. Sure. And they're the only ones who have the estate sales.
Yes.
So you're doing your one-man show, Be Fruitful.
Yes.
At the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Yes.
According to the press release, it's about homophobia and fatphobia, falling in love, and I quote, the biology and evolution of fruit.
Yes.
And can I ask you something?
Yes.
Is the fact that you have been and perhaps remain an official spokesperson for prunes, does that factor in?
Have you guys recently tried a California pitted prune? It's delicious. It's a sophisticated French treat that you like never think to indulge in, and it's delicious. But yes, that, I will.
You know what? This is the problem in politics, because whatever guy really feels, the prune money got to him. All right.
Yeah.
And now it's all prunes all the time with this guy.
First of all, my love of prunes is sincere and is a lifelong love. I come from a little town in Northern California that grows a lot of peaches and prunes, and so that did make me like think about fruit more than I should, and also led to my relationship with the California Prune Board. And also, who wrote this press release? Because it's not really about homophobia. The show is basically just saying, like, I'm a gay guy, so I'm not going to have children. Like, I am a very fat person, so I'm not what you're supposed to look for in genetics. And, you know, if I, you know, there's not really a religion that wants gay people. Like, if I exist outside of evolution and religion, what is the purpose of my existence? And I go on a 55-minute journey through that. And also, there are some stops along the way to talk about fruit.
Well, that sounds just lovely, Guy.
It really is.
You know what I wanted to ask you? I was thinking about you coming on the show, and you've been on this show many times.
Yes.
It's not even a countable number of times at
this
point. It's water in an ocean. What was the very first time you did stand-up?
The first time I ever did stand-up was at the One World Cafe in San Francisco, my last year at Berkeley. And the cafe always had a good audience, because Robin Williams, when he would go on talk shows, real talk shows, he would promote random open mics in San Francisco so that people would show up for the rest of the year. And so it was like a really lovely experience. And I was so scared. I was so scared my knee wouldn't stop bouncing the entire time. And it was, I loved it so much. Thank you for bringing that memory back.
Well, the reason I was thinking about it is because I was thinking about you doing your show, and I was thinking about the intelligence and confidence that you have always carried yourself with, despite being a gay person in a shape that is often frowned upon in both religion and the community.
Yes.
And I was thinking, oh, I wonder what it would have been like to see Guy as a nervous kid getting up there, because it's hard to conceive. And I imagine there are people that might want to try doing something on stage, and they would see someone like you with the level of aplomb and confidence and fast-talking Jewishness you bring to the exercise and think, that could never be me, and yet.
Well, no, for my first 2 years of stand-up, everyone would just be like, I think of you more as a writer. You should be a writer. Like, it was very much sort of like, you're bad at performing. And then eventually I became so good at performing that I became a terrible writer. Like, really irresponsible, because I could get by on charm.
The Hollywood dream, by the way. There's not a writer in this town. They moved here for two reasons: to have a house with a pool and to stop writing. That's the two goals.
It's very true.
So you also, by the way, people should know this, you emceed the rehearsal of our wedding, and we've put a moratorium on wedding conversations because just we've talked about it. But I will just want to say, you do something amazing, right? Because you're a big dude.
Yes.
And you are walking around a room full of people, asking questions, pestering people, and you do it with there's not a tiniest bit of like intimidation in how you talk to people. And that's an interesting quality that I think you don't, like, when I think of the list of things you would say about you, right? Funny, smart, first and second. But you would never say like, oh, wow, he's a big guy, but he is so lovable that there's not an ounce of, the scale does not intimidate a single person, from the older aunts to the shy coworkers, et cetera.
That's shocking to me, because my goal is to be as terrifying as possible. But I think part of it was just, like, that wedding was such a beautiful view of you and Ari through the people who love you most. And I was just so fascinated to learn about everyone who was there that I was just excited to get to know them. And then getting to see everybody who got up there and tore you guys apart. It was so much fun.
It was a bit of a roast. Yes. Genuine interest in people. I've never experienced it. And it's so interesting to observe from afar. You were nominated for an Emmy for writing on Hacks.
I was. I write on the television program Hacks. Thank you.
The most nominations, 24, for a comedy ever.
I know, it's very exciting. We tore it up on Best Guest Actress in a Comedy. We got 5 of the 7 nominations.
Wait, that's crazy. No. I didn't know that.
Yes, 2 of them from the episode that I co-wrote. Very exciting. Leslie Bibb and Cherry Jones, I am pulling for them. But it's them, Lauren Weedman, Laurie Metcalf, and Caitlin Olsen. And it's just an array of amazing talents. And it is one of those situations of like, how are you going to pick one of those to win? How are you going to pick?
I feel like there were two kinds of schools. There were the schools where there was going to be one valedictorian.
Yes.
And it was a winner-take-all situation. Yes. And there were the schools that said, the kids don't compete. Everyone can achieve a certain threshold, and then we'll have several valedictorians. Yes. And I feel like we need that spirit with awards, because there are some years where it's like, I don't know, The Shape of Water, I guess.
Yeah.
And then there's years where there's like four movies that in any other year would be the best picture. Same with Emmys.
Back in the 70s, in the Tonys, they would just be like, there are no best supporting or best featured actresses this year. There's just like, no one's good enough really this year. And it was kind of funny. As someone who was the only valedictorian of their class, I like it when there's only one.
Wow. You were the valedictorian?
It was a high school of 60, or it was 300 people. My graduating class was 60 people, and the second highest, this is back when SATs were out of 1600, the second highest SAT score in my class was a 1040.
Wow. And that's where you're from?
That's where I'm from. A place where you grow peaches and prunes. Don't need to know a bunch of algebra to grow a prune.
Well, that's what Stalin thought. And then all of a sudden you're like, what if we double the wheat? What if there's no fucking wheat? That's the thing about Stalin and planting the things too close together and then blaming...
Kulaks. You blame kulaks.
Fuck, you got there first.
Yes,
fuck.
Thank you.
Those are the bourgeoisie farm owners. You blame them.
It's important that you guys know that John and I were on a quiz show with each other like a week and a half ago, and neither of us are more alive than when we are intellectually competing, and we were so beautifully evenly matched that neither of us were happy.
Yes. Yes, we just walked out in sort of a silence. Good to see you. I guess I'll see you in a couple weeks.
It had been really fun, though.
We had a great time. It was a lighthearted little video podcast, and by the end, it was like the World Cup. Like, we're flopping, we're yelling, we're, yes, like, calling out the refs, we're questioning the rules of the question. Can there be a yellow card in this fucking thing?
Yes.
Now, you also have been hosting a series called Old Gays Remember.
Yes.
Which you explain classic pop culture is something that is sort of intrinsic to your upbringing and understanding of the world, but would be completely unfamiliar to, say, someone under 25.
Right.
What is your favorite example of something that is that you can't believe people don't know about?
Oh, okay. Can't believe people don't know about. I would say the best thing was just that Stonewall happened the night of Judy Garland's funeral. And like, there's a lot of gay politics around, do we want to say that these things are related? Does it make us look frivolous to say that these things are related? But like, I think the fact that the two things synchronized is important and should be known. And I think it says something really important about gay politics in the way that it is intrinsically linked to culture.
Yeah, I mean, if Kid Rock died on January 6th,
yes,
I think people would be like, yeah, I think it's related.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
But the thing that was most amazing to me is that some things that aren't so obviously transparently queer have had such resonance. Most specifically, I did a video about 1980s sitcom actress Ann Gillian, who no one remembers, but she was basically Kim Cattrall before Kim Cattrall. And like, a friend of mine from Toronto was like, I just had to explain who Ann Gillian was to a 27-year-old. You have to make a video. And then I did, and people went crazy for it.
And I just have to be the kind of gay who remembers that Kim Cattrall's best performance in her career was in Star Trek VI. Undiscovered Country.
I mean, she played Lieutenant Savick.
God damn. Why wasn't she Savick?
Because,
tell the people.
Okay, because in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, what's her name from Cheers?
Kirstie Alley
played Lieutenant Savick, and then her career became too big, and then they replaced her with a different Savick in Star Trek III, and then they basically made the character again for Kim Cattrall in Undiscovered Country.
But they didn't keep the name. They didn't keep the name. But it was meant to be for Kirstie Alley, who I think was having like a drug issue at the time. There was something about that went into
Narcanon it. Narcanon was how she got into Scientology. You guys, this is what that whole game show was like.
Speaking of games, it's time for a quiz we're calling Ye Olde Gay News.
Yep.
Here's how it works. I'm going to quiz you on some gay history.
Okay.
And let's see if this old gay remembers.
Okay.
What colorfully named societal panic, which ran alongside the Red Scare, saw between 5,000 and 10,000 gay men and lesbians fired or forced to resign from their federal jobs throughout the 1950s?
Largely the State Department, because we love to help people get together. That was the Lavender Panic. That was the Lavender Panic.
The Lavender Panic, Lavender Scare, will accept
yes.
it. It was kicked off by the Lavender Scare was kicked off by Dwight D. Eisenhower, who signed an executive order adding sexual perversion as a disqualifying factor for receiving government security requirements and effectively barring LGBTQ people from federal jobs. Next up, founded in 1950 by Harris Hayes and the Homosexuals of L.A., this early pivotal gay rights organization was named after French Renaissance mask dancing, in which secret fraternities of unmarried men would don masks and dance for the equinox.
That is the Mattachine Society.
That is correct. Some Mattachine members would go to straight bars, announce that they were gay, and then once they were denied service, sue the bar for discrimination.
How did that work out in the 50s?
Not particularly well. There was a name for these demonstrations.
Oh, what?
Sippins.
Oh, that's fun. That's
Sippins,
cute.
Sippins, huh? The gays were clever back then, too.
Yep.
You know? Sippins. When you think about it. Fill in the blank. The first lesbian organization in the United States, founded in San Francisco in 1955, was named the Daughters of Blank after a fictional contemporary of Sappho created by French poet Pierre Louis.
It is called The Daughters of Bilitis, but on the episode of Designing Women, where Suzanne found out that her old beauty pageant friend was a lesbian, they called it Sisters of Sappho. And I think that's a much better name.
That is a better name.
Yes.
It was too heady of a name. I was worried that I wasn't sure what level these questions. That is a hard question. That is a hard question. And some of these are multiple choice, and he's just calling it out before we get to the choices. Name the gay Jewish sexologist who had a German Institute for Sexual Science looted and its books, many of which explore gender and sexuality, burned by the Nazis in 1933.
Unfortunately, I didn't watch that season of Transparent.
Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld.
I should have remembered that. I've read that enough.
Last question.
But if you talk to me about a German Jewish sexologist, I just want to talk about Dr. Ruth Westheimer, you know?
Yeah, final question. What is Cher's full birth name?
It's Cheryl Lynn Sarkeesian or Sarkeesian?
Yeah, you got it. You got it. According to Cher's mother, she was debating between Cheryl and Sherilyn and forgot which one she actually put on Cher's birth certificate. Everybody, if you check out Be Fruitful in Edinburgh from August 5th through the 31st and head to @GuyBranum on Instagram for tickets. Thank you, guys. Good to see you. And we'll be right back.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
This episode is sponsored by the International Rescue Committee. Today, millions of children in conflict zones like Sudan and Gaza are fighting just to survive. Beyond the constant threat of hunger, they are facing severe water shortages and are cut off from even the most basic healthcare. That's why we want to tell you about the important work being done by the International Rescue Committee. They're on the ground at some of the most vulnerable places in the world, helping families access food, medical care, clean water, and support for new moms and babies. They even train local health workers so care reaches those who might otherwise be completely cut off. You can help the IRC support even more children in need. For a limited time, all donations are matched to Rush2X, the emergency aid. Help save a child's life. Give now at rescue.org/rebuild. That's rescue.org/rebuild. All right, back to the show. Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Hims. Losing weight is one thing, but feeling your best this summer, that's the real goal. That's why Weight Loss by Hims is now offering access to the FDA-approved Wegovy pill and Wegovy pen. Wegovy is designed to help you lose weight sustainably so you can show up this summer feeling like yourself. With Hims, everything happens online. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Hims makes hitting your goals seamless by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and in-app lifestyle and nutrition support like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. With a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hims makes it simple to find a weight loss approach that fits into your world and your wallet. If eligible, you'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. Ready to reach your goals? Visit Hims.com/loveit to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's HIMS.com/loveit, Hims.com/loveit. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit Hims.com.
And we're back! My next guest puts the character in character actress. Oh, and also the actress. Please welcome Missy Pyle.
Hi.
Come on in. Hi, it's nice to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks
nice
for
to be
being here.
Thanks for having me.
So you're in a new show.
I'm in a new show.
About a 17-year-old who inherits an island in Canada.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a dream.
I mean, can you imagine? She's like at home and this lawyer comes and is like, you have this grandfather. She didn't even know she had. She's like a mystery granddad who died and left her an island.
Wow. That would change everything.
It would be so nice. You know, I don't have all my grandparents left me. They didn't leave me anything. They didn't even leave me a dollar.
Oh.
That's sad.
Little bits of, you know, kind of, we got like kind of classic Jewish jewelry, you know, passed down.
I got some like Dutch, like little shoes that you put on the counter.
Oh.
That was it.
Are you Dutch?
No.
Weird. and the show's called Sterling Point.
It's called Sterling Point.
Is that the name of the island?
That's the name of the island,
wow.
Yeah. And they go, and they're adopted from birth, and their adoptive mother died when they were two. And so their dad never told them about this grandfather. And so the lead character, which is played by this incredible actress named Ella Rubin, and actually Mark Ruffalo's son plays her brother. So the two of them go, end up at the island, and they find out all kinds of twists and turns, mostly from my character.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, my character is this like really, really rich real estate mogul, and I own a lot of the island.
Mm.
Yeah.
It sounds like evil Anne of Green Gables.
Right, basically. Yeah.
And you played a horny divorcee on Stop That Train.
We did that together. Yeah.
You were both in Stop That Train.
Yeah.
We were queer icons.
Yes, we really are. Yes, my character's name was Horny Divorcee. I was like, does she have a name? And he was like, no, it's she's Horny Divorcee. So I was like, okay.
Huh. I'm trying to think of what's it like, because when I was growing up, there was an old lady named Horty.
Sure.
Horty. Horty Schmierer.
Do you think Horty was horny?
She didn't seem horny. She seemed really focused on making sure the camp was fun for the kids. But I don't know what she and High Schmierer got up to at night.
Yeah, you never know what they got.
She could have been horny at night. She wasn't ever horny in my presence.
Yeah.
She was more kind of, to be honest, like, you know, motherly.
Was she a hoarder?
No.
Was she horty?
She was, it was horty. What a name.
Horny.
That's right.
Yeah, something like that.
Was there a prep? Because you have a nip slip in Stop That Train.
Yes.
What?
One of the most historic nip slips in the history of film, really.
Thank you.
Iconic.
And what was the prep like for that?
The prep was that we came in and they had a bunch of different nipples to try on. And some of them were too big and some of them were too small and then some of them were just right. But then we ended up not using them because ultimately it didn't look like a real nipple. So I believe it's a CGI nipple. It's quite large.
So interesting. And was there any discussion and pardon me for the question, if it's inappropriate in some way, why not just throw your nipple out there?
Well, because the whole gag is that she was so dumb. I'm just like, oh, you know, it accidentally falls out. And then Drew Drogi goes, that woman's got a giant nipple.
Oh,
You
say no more.
Thank you.
Unless you want to say more.
But also, I'm shocked. I would think if anybody could do practical nipple work, it would be the people behind RuPaul's Drag Race. And I'm stunned because it looks so real. I thought it was practical.
Right?
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Well, I think they thought that the big, big, big one was going to be too big and it would be ridiculous. So they put one on that wasn't that big and it didn't really seem like a giant nipple.
Yes.
I'm not saying it wasn't. Actually, let me rewind. It was a nipple. It was actually just not quite big enough.
Oh, because I would say as far as that film goes, oh no, if the nipple's too big, nobody's going to take this seriously.
I also, one of my favorite moments in it is that I have, I eat some cherries in my mouth, whatever, and then I pull out all the cherry stems, you know, anybody tie one in a knot? Yeah, so I pull it out and it says I'm horny in cursive.
Wow, that's horny, people.
That's horny, yeah.
Now, I did want to ask you about something, which is you appeared on the Dog Whisperer with Cesar Millan.
Yes. Are you fascinated with Cesar Millan?
Yes. As someone who has been told by Hallie Kiefer, the head writer of this show, that I'm in a Finn-Dom relationship with a golden doodle.
You are. Yeah.
I am interested in the tips about, because he just goes shh, and then the dogs go shh. And when I go shh, nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
What was your experience like?
Well, first of all, I was married to a guy at the time who had a grizzly bear as the best, that was the best man at our wedding, which is, was that a question you were going to ask?
No, I will get to that.
Oh, okay.
I'm happy to hear
so
about
this.
So
we were living in Montana and we did this, like Caesar came to the house and I lived in this geodome and what I remember about Caesar is he was such an interesting guy. And like, this was a while ago, but still you could text and be on your phone. And the entire time he was at my house, he was just staring me right in the face. You know, he never broke eye contact with me. And, at one point I was like, he said something and I was like, well, you're making me nervous. And he said, well, I'm trying to get you to calm down. He's like, your dogs are sensing your energy. So, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about you, but I do think that we might have something like that in common, that you probably are running on a really high energy.
Do you think?
And that the dogs were just sort of like they need you to be calm and firm. And it was crazy. I had this dog, Ellie, and she would attack female dogs. That was her thing. She was like a mutt rescue. And she'd even fallen off the cliff at the Hollywood sign, had to have her legs, like the bones fused and rebuilt. She was in casts for 2 years. And she was a bruiser bitch. I mean, she loved to go and get on a female. But if there was a male dog, even a Chihuahua, she would totally demure.
So not really a girl's girl.
Yeah.
No, not really. And I could not, and I had another dog named JJ who was a Dalmatian. He was really big. And I remember crying at the time thinking, I remember there was one time I was walking at in my neighborhood. I used to live in Beechwood. And I had them on the leash. They were both probably about 70 pounds. And they jerked away from me and ran and killed a squirrel immediately. That's funny to you.
Could be worse.
And I remember thinking, oh my God, I sobbed on the street. I thought, I'm going to be 45 and still have these asshole dogs. And now I'm older than that and they've passed. But they were, when he walked in the room, they just, he went on a walk. They walked behind him. They'd never had.
Wow.
Like, I took them to, Canyon Ranch to train them. I took them to places.
Well, that's for people to do yoga. I think that's your problem. That's where divorcees have cottage cheese for a week to restart their lives.
It's a slightly different one, but probably they branched out.
Oh, different Canyon Ranch.
This was a while ago. I don't know if it's still there.
There's one for dogs? Wow.
You know, I think you should have maybe sent that female dog to Bryn Mawr to learn about some feminism so that she could support other female dogs.
That's true. Yeah. What a bitch.
Now, as you said, you were married to Casey Anderson, who's a naturalist and a filmmaker, and you did have a grizzly bear cub in your... Now, can we just show some of these pictures?
Yeah.
These are not Photoshop.
They're not Photoshop.
Can we show another?
You could...
I mean, are you kidding? Are you kidding?
So that room is there. There's a sanctuary there, and they have they have to go inside at night. So they had three big enclosures for the bears, and behind the bear is a door that goes to those enclosures. But yeah, he's just right there. There's Grizzly Greg on the left, who's now that TikTok is around, I think he's got a big presence. And Amy, who lived there.
So, do we have any more of the photos? Yeah. So
it's him in a hot tub with a bear.
Yeah.
And I thought it was hot.
Right. So, interesting. Hey, do you remember The Revenant? Leo makes getting eaten by a bear seem terrible in that film.
Yeah. I remember I asked my friend Christine to be my maid of honor, and she was like, I just hope that I'm not walking down the aisle with a bear and I'm on my period.
Right, because I remember the film The Edge with Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins, and a character in that film gets eaten by a bear because he has a little cut on his leg.
Exactly.
And that's sort of the thing that sets off the whole film about the fight between man and bear.
This was The Edge too, my wedding.
And so, you know, did you have any cold feet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a week beforehand, I was like, this is a terrible idea. And then I did it anyway. But my friend Christine also was like, I just feel like, you're marrying a man who can't find a human to be his best man.
Right.
You know?
That's such an interesting second order concern. It's like my, because you might meet somebody and they might be the person for you and maybe they don't have a lot of good friends. So you say, mm-hmm. Oh, that's a little bit of a red flag. Separately, if there's also a fucking bear, you're not like, oh.
He was like, well, the bear's my best friend. And I was like, okay. And then what you don't see is there's a line of like hot wire, but like a thin line that was never on. It was never on. And I think that might have been the day that it was the first time I got a high five from Brutus. And it was so, like, I've seen him give Brutus a high five many times. So when he did to me, my arm was like, shabong. And I was like, oh, this is a grizzly bear.
Right. And he did get eaten by the bear?
Yes.
That's how the marriage ended?
Wish. No, I'm kidding. No, he's not. No, it just was.
Did you ever say something like, I'll tell you what's grizzly, dinner with my in-laws. You ever try material out like that when you were around the bear a lot?
Mm-hmm. The bear was.
I love my in-laws.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's nice.
Just want to say that because I had that joke there about the grizzly in-laws.
Oh,
but
I
love them.
Okay.
They're great.
They
were just new to being in-laws, so I don't want to fuck it up this early on.
How long have you been married?
A couple months.
Okay.
So I got to see. I want to keep it nice and good for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I guess.
I mean, indefinitely? Yeah,
yeah.
That's
I want
a good
it to be a
plan.
Nice relationship indefinitely.
Yeah. Just be yourself.
Was there any moment when the relationship was ending where you thought, and obviously the bear will come with me?
I mean, it would be kind of fun to bring the bear back to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I have to imagine Montana divorces involve a lot of bear custody issues.
Thank you, Missy Pye. When we come back, we're going to talk more about, we're going to really quiz people about the various
shenanigans I've been in.
You've been in, yeah.
Okay, perfect.
And we'll be right back.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Quince. Summer days are always a little more relaxed, so when I open my closet, I find myself reaching for the same comfortable go-anywhere clothes again and again. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on well-made essentials that naturally become those everyday staples you live in all season long. Quince is 100% European linen pants and shirts are breathable, easy to throw on, and the summer upgrade your rotation needs, starting at just $34. Their tees are so soft you'll never want to take them off, and the lightweight cotton sweaters are exactly what you'd want when summer nights cool down. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for exceptional quality, not brand markup. I've gotten great sheets from Quince. I've gotten great sweats from Quince. I even got a rug from Quince. It should just be a place you go and check when you're shopping for something online, because you'll find like a high quality but affordable version at Quince, and great designs and sort of great taste. Make your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/loveit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/loveit for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/loveit.
Oh.
Now, Sterling Point is on Prime Video starting Wednesday, August 5th. But I want to now look backwards, because you have been, first of all, we've had a lot of great actors on the show that have had incredibly varied careers. The current count on your IMDb is 211 appearances. You have been in 211 things.
I mean, I guess that's...
That's a lot.
Okay.
That's a lot. Like, you've been you have been hustling since seriously.
It's true.
Like,
I mean, I have
that is
been
an incredible achievement.
Time.
No, but like to have been like consistently working for the better part of 30 years, basically.
Yeah, except for the time that I moved to Montana
with the bear. But that was a different kind of work. But it's time for Was I In This?
Yay!
All right, here we go. First up, Missy gave Tony Shalhoub an out of this world kiss as Alien Laliari. Laliari? In 1999's Galaxy Quest, true or false?
True.
Like, I completely forgot about it, and then you said it, and then what an indelible image that was. You were amazing in that movie.
Thank you very much. It was such an incredible... I mean, it was ridiculous. It was like my first movie, and Steven Spielberg came to the set, because it was made by DreamWorks, and they realized that they didn't have another woman. I was only supposed to be in a couple of scenes, so that whole thing came because Steven was like... Oh, let's make her part bigger, which, I mean, when does that ever happen?
Well, what if that's such a funny 1999 thing, which is like it's like, you know, oh, Hollywood's made so much progress, but Steven Spielberg comes to set. He's like, we forgot to have the women talk. Come on, guys. We forgot to have the women talk.
And I don't talk. I mean, yeah, I really don't. I mean,
but
I,
you're amazing. Galaxy Quest, I feel like I've been an evangelist for Galaxy Quest since it came out because, just to be honest, I think because it starred Tim Allen and it was in the Home Improvement era, everyone thought like, oh, it's Tim Allen. Like, he's not, like, it's not, it's like something, it's like sitcom-y. And like, no, Galaxy Quest is one of the best comedies of like the last 30 years.
Well,
incredible.
So Harold Ramis was initially going to direct it and he wanted Kevin Klein. And then when they wanted Tim Allen, he was like, I won't do this. It's, from my understanding, it could be bullshit. But and then Tim Allen is so perfect.
He's really good.
He's so perfect because he is this like washed up TV actor and who is all of a sudden like being like taken on a journey, like you're the captain, come save us. And he rises to the occasion.
Also, giving Sigourney Weaver slightly not enough to do is amazing because she takes that role and she does stuff with it that no one else would.
Yeah. She's like, I have just nothing to do but to repeat the computer. And at one point, Daryl Mitchell is like, that's really annoying. She's got, like, I've got one job on this ship. It's stupid, but I'm going to do it.
What was Alan Rickman like on that during that movie?
Alan Rickman is like, you know, here's one of the things. When you're on a big movie set and you're with big stars, lunch happens. They go straight to their trailers, right? So the rest of them would go. Tim would go. Sigourney would go. You know, Sam Rockwell. They would all go to their trailers. But Alan would go get his lunch and come sit with the Thermians. It was so sweet.
He's great in that movie, too.
And he's so great, and he's just a kind human being. And then, like, I went to, I don't think he thought of himself necessarily as, like, a big star. And he was such an open, kind person. And I do think it would drive him crazy because Tim Allen and Daryl Mitchell and Sam Rockwell, like, it would be, like, rolling where they would roll the sound, speed, right before you're about to take, and then someone would go, pooh. Like, one of them would just do a a fart noise, you know?
And he's Alan Rickman.
Alan would just be like, oh, for God's sake.
It's funny that everybody was their character. I mean, that is,
100%.
you have Sigourney Weaver playing this sort of floozy type character, annoyed about Alan Rickman, this serious Shakespearean actor, Tim Allen, a TV actor. That's so funny that how much it mirrored what they were all like.
Such a good film. And the film is written, I believe the screenplay is written by Robert Gordon. And it was originally written by somebody else, and they wanted a new screenplay. And Robert Gordon, he didn't even read the first script. They just gave him the story, and he came up with it. And I think, if you haven't seen it, it is truly one of the most infinitely watchable movies. Like,
it's the best.
Almost every scene is perfect.
Next question. Missy played tax lawyer turned dodgeball player Kate Vayach in Ben Stiller's Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story. True or false? False. That was Christine Taylor. You played
Fran Stalinoskovich Davidovichki.
say one more time.
Fran Stalinoskovich Davidovichki.
Wow. You just threw it away.
From Romanovia.
Yeah, from Romanovia.
Romanovia, yeah.
That's
sexy
also
teeth.
I also like that idea of like a, is that a made up place? Sounds
yeah,
like a made
it's
up
totally
place.
Made up. Yeah. And like initially when I read it, you know, that in the first version she was a robot. And then they had this like scene where you meet her and like, remember those old, it was like an old cartoon maybe from, the Looney Tunes where like, you know, the woman would you'd go up her legs and there'd be the sexy music and like, rah, 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 you see a nice butt and nice boobs and then her face, you go, ah, and that was kind of the idea. Like a man, you know, that was her. Remember that?
That was good. I like that.
That's who I am on the inside.
Well,
that.
Like sort of you were and so like in multiple different things it was like we need someone that is hot but also maybe a little weird and then a little weirdly hot. Get me Missy Pyle.
Yeah. I couldn't book anything straight to save my life. Like anything that was like a romantic lead. I mean, I tried really hard and I auditioned for Party of Five. Remember that? Like those shows I don't know, 25 times. And they never cast me. It was just too weird. And if it was weird, I was like, I get it. I understand it. Or they'd be like, don't do that thing with your eyes, you know? And I was like, I'm just being me, you know?
This town.
This town.
Hollywood. Here's another question. Missy played the first lady on a little sitcom called 1600 Penn. True or false? Wow, just deafening silence. Not fans of the one season hit failure 1600.
How do you know
created
about,
by multi-hyphenate John Lovett?
Created by me, co-created. That's actually false, as you all know. Missy played Secret Service agent Sarah Harlan.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I loved it. It was so cool.
What are some of your favorite memories from 1600 Ben?
Just kind of being like this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was fun.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember a thing about it.
It's so long ago. I do remember playing the character. I remember Josh Gad, Jason Weiner, who I actually did. Did he direct that episode?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jason Weiner and I had done two improv pilots that were so fun. And one of them got picked up by, I think it was, you know, Disney, whoever owned Disney. Somebody had just bought Disney. And then it got picked up that day. And then they canceled it by the afternoon because Disney had.
Hollywood.
Said forget it, yeah.
Final question. True or false, Octavia Spencer struck Missy down as the villainous Dr. Evelini on Disney's The Wizards of Waverly Place. True or false? False. However, Octavia Spencer did run Missy down with her car as the titular villain in the 2019 horror film Ma. This also, to me, is up there in the pantheon of great parts of a movie where somebody gets hit by a car. And I do want to show you what I do believe is the current leader in the genre, and it is from the film Meet Joe Black. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Guy, do you remember that?
Is that real?
Yeah.
No. I mean, is it real? Like, is it?
Yeah, that was Brad Pitt.
Yeah, Brad Pitt. That's when Brad Pitt died.
No.
Can we just?
Is that in that? I did not last all 2 hours of Meet Joe Black.
So I will just say you. If that you made it that far, maybe you've blocked it out, but that is the inciting incident of the movie.
Oh, because really?
Thereafter, he's a different person,
he's
death himself, and does use soon after this a Jamaican accent.
Oh,
yeah, the 90s. It's okay because he's
is
a character.
Is that truly had a Jamaican
for part of it, just
that's
in a scene that
insane.
Comes
insane. All right, but did you ask Missy that many questions about her career and not mention the best picture that she was in?
Why don't you, I was going to get there next, but why don't you do it?
You were in The Artist. Like,
I was in The Artist.
That's like, what?
Does anybody know about The Artist? The silent film with Jean Dujardin. Jean Dujardin and Michael Hazanavicius wrote
like,
it.
What an amazing use of your skills. Like, what an amazing use of, like, as somebody, like, in that scene from Ma, like, beautiful, gorgeous woman, but, like, with personality enough that, like, memorable and you identify it, and, like, putting you in something where you had to play a silent film actress, I just think was brilliant.
I love you so much. What's
sort
really interesting...
Sort of took the words out of my mouth.
I was in Montana living in the Geodome. I'd come back to do, like, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'd done 1600 pen. Sorry. And I was in town, and I got this audition, and I was like, what is this? You know, and I went in to audition for the wife of Jean Dujardin, who's the main character. It's about tap dancing, and, you know, he's like a Hollywood star who sort of collapses, and it's a beautiful film. But, I mean, nobody thought this film was going to do anything, right?
Yeah.
And there were no dialogue. And then I get there, and I was auditioning for his wife, the play character that Penelope Ann Miller ended up playing. And I get there, and I stand in the room, and I'm like, but you know, doing my audition, and I'm like, okay, here we go. And I start. I was like, and the guy and the casting director was like, no, you can talk. We're just not going to record the dialogue. And I was like, oh, okay, because I was. And what's ironic, and then I get to work, I think I'm playing the wife. They're like, you're playing the actress. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm an actor. I was like, what are they doing? I mean, they're calling me an actor. And I get there, and I'm not playing that part. But because there were no lines to learn, I just played a different character.
What a dream.
It was
crazy.
There's
no lines to learn.
No, except for there was one day, there's a moment in the film where I'm acting, because my character actually is named Constance Zimmer, who's a friend of mine, this other amazing actress, Constance Zimmer. And she's married to John Goodman. And at one point, The director, Michael Hazanavicius, comes to me and says, Missy, we need you to do the Shakespearean monologue from Romeo and Juliet. And I was like, and this is like after lunch. And I was like, okay, I'm doing a silent movie. And now you're asking me to just, like from the top of my head, do the, oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo, which is, everybody knows that monologue. So I had to, I was in the, like, trying to learn Shakespeare. Isn't that crazy?
Oh,
so dumb.
Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Thank you, Missy and Guy. We'll be right back. And we're back. Now it's time to end our evening with a segment we call Second Thoughts. Missy and Guy, the show's producers have handed me a list of things I said or did tonight that they think I shouldn't have said or done. We're going to see if we agree with them. Also, if you have any second thoughts from this evening, now is the time. This is a point where we think, even in the last hour, were there things that we would have done differently? Have we changed and grown while being here? You know? I'll go first. I accidentally wrote that novel about Lindsey Graham's Mar-a-Lago heaven. Which you all sat through silently. Nope, I stand by it. That was good stuff. I shouldn't have said that the bass would be bottom gun. I should have said bottom gun. I said it goes without saying that it's wrong to throw your phone at someone after saying it 2 to 3 times.
I think that's good comedy.
I accused Guy of being beholden to Big Prune. I admitted,
hey, that's just you acknowledging political realities.
Yeah,
okay?
That's just how I'm just, you know, cui bono, you know, follow the money.
But at least she didn't call you a big prune.
You're right. You big prune.
Look.
That's something that Blanche would call Dorothy.
Yes.
On Golden Girls. Shut up, you big prune, you slut, you whore. We're friends.
I'm visibly very ripe. If at any point in time the GLP-1 drugs work enough that I do get wrinkly, then we can call me a big prune.
Right. So we're still living in the plum zone.
We're still in the plum zone.
I admitted to my lack of interest in other people on the talk show that I host. I sounded too surprised that Guy was valedictorian. I brought Stalin into this. Pretty long Star Trek tangent, huh?
How dare they?
Get out of here. Where's my phone? Throw your phones at yourselves. Missy, I responded to your description of your new show with cool.
You did.
You didn't
ask any follow-up questions.
I did.
I asked,
is that the name of the island?
It's a really fun show.
It's a great show. Sterling
sexy
Point
young
on Amazon
people
Prime,
getting
August
an island,
island,
finding out new things.
You play a real estate mogul.
At one point, I take a balloon and I suck the helium out and sing a song.
Wow, sort of getting typecast with also what you did during when you played the horny divorcee. You know,
basically.
So it's interesting to think about that. I said the words, "Why not just throw your own nipple out there?"
It's 2026.
Oh, good news. This is a rare thing. There's a kudos here. That's when a rare kudos, and it is simply not for me. It is for you, Missy Pyle.
Oh.
Kudos for Missy correctly diagnosing that Lovett's anxiety is the problem with his dog.
I mean, honestly, it is.
Yeah. I showed you getting hit by a car in Ma.
Yeah.
Was that an intro? What's that day like?
It's pretty great, you know, and I think the song that they play after that got nominated for like best song in a movie.
Oh, cool.
And at one point, my daughter, I think she was born in 2015, and I was watching the video that my friend, who Tate Taylor's director, sent to me, and she's looking over my shoulder as she sees me get hit by a car, and she starts to cry, and I was like, oh, that was not as great of a parenting move as I could have. But it was fun. There was a dummy dressed up like me. I think I have some pictures of, I didn't bring them, of course, but of me and the dummy.
And that's our show. Thank you so much to Guy Brown and Missy Pyle. There are 97 days until the midterms. We'll be back Friday with David Diggs and Anthony Michael Hall. Thank you all so much for being here. Have a good night. Love It or Leave It is a Cricket Media production. Our show is produced by Kendra James, Bill McGrath, Kelsey Gante, and me, John Lovett. Our production team includes Hallie Kiefer, Sarah Lazarus, Raman Borsellino, Peter Miller, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Jay Banks, Gavin Purcell, and Matt DeGroat. And our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.